I'm a grateful Kevinac named Joe. I just want to take a moment of silence. Thank you. I'm a grateful Kevinac. My name is Joe. You know, it was asked of me if I can carry a clear message. So let me just see. Can y'all hear me back there? Is that clear enough for your ass? Then we clear. You know, I really would rather sit down so I don't have to look at everybody in this room. So I'm going to look at my sister, Tish, in the back there. Right? So she can help me focus. You know, I needed to talk to God for a minute. You know, in January 2nd, in the Just for the Day, it says, take a deep breath and talk to God. Right? And I need to do that all the time. I need to do that all the time so that I don't get out of myself. You know what I mean? I don't get caught up in my self-centeredness. Because I can be real self-centered. And I didn't know that until I got here to Narcotics Anonymous. And let me just ask another question. Is there any newcomers in this room? Anybody new to Narcotics Anonymous? If you are, raise your hand. Please raise your hand if you're new. Welcome to Narcotics Anonymous. You are in the right place. I need to tell you that. Because I didn't think I was in the right place when I got here. But I've been here for a second now. And I know that I'm in the right place. Listen, I'm in awe right now. I'm honored. I'm humbled. You know, I've spoken in a few conventions. Never in one as big as this. I see a lot of people in my area who are here to support me. And you know what? I'm not at it. And they know. They know how I am. I'm not an addict. Don't think nobody loves me. Right? So in my first step, it talks about that something inside me. That same something inside me, right? And even here now today, I can still feel like I don't measure up. I want to thank the sister because she let me go first. I really didn't want to. But it's all right. Because when I was using, nobody let me go first. The only time I got to go first was when I bought it. Or I had the stem. Right? You got the stem, you don't need the money. You know what I mean? So, thank God, man. Thank God we made it. Started from the bottom. That's right. Listen. A funny thing happened on the way here, right? Listen, a cat ran up on me and he said, listen, man, I ain't had a hit in a couple of days. He said, can you help me out? So I hit his ass. And I said, you never have to use again. Now, that's a joke. I said that shit one time and everybody was like, oh, they thought I was messed up like that, man. Nah, I wouldn't do that, man. The topic is grief in recovery, right? Grief in recovery. And grief, carries a lot of areas. You know, we grieve in a lot of different ways. People grieve differently. I learned how to deal with grief in recovery as a result of working a program, having some steps and some traditions in my life, you know. And everybody deals with grief differently. And when we talk about grief, the first thing we think of is death. You know, we think of the death of a loved one. You know, loss of a loved one. But there are many different areas that we grieve loss in. You know, we hear people come in here and they talk about losing jobs. Right? I know some people who talked about losing homes. You know, but what is grief? Let me see. See, I think I know what it is, so I'm not going to talk about what I know. I have to go in the book. I have to get the real definition, right? Because it's real easy for me to give you my stuff. But I'm going to give you what the book says, some of the things. I'm not going all the way in there. I had to talk to my sponsor about speaking here, right? When I found out, and they told me this a couple of months ago, man, that I was going to be speaking in Ocean City. And you know what? I ain't been right since. I've been fucked up ever since, man. And excuse me, I might curse a little bit. I try not to do a lot of cursing. I can use different language today. You know what I mean? But I've been fucked up ever since. I couldn't even sleep last night, man. Seriously. I was up. I never went to sleep. And that only happened when I was using. And I ain't using today. But it's all right. You know, grief, keen mental suffering or distress over affliction or loss, or loss. A painful regret. Grief is a topic that covers many areas, right? Sorrow, misery, sadness, pain, distress. You know, sometimes I cause myself grief just because I don't want to listen to some suggestions that y'all tell me to take. One is a relationship, right? But that's another story. I ain't going there. I will not go there. But listen, I come from the era of, I was born in the 50s and I grew up in the 60s and the 70s, you know, when Schaefer was the one beer to have when you was having more than one. Miller High Light, the champagne, a bottle beer. You know, I grew up with real dope fiends, if you want to call them that. Dope addicts, junkies. I know some cats that stood in the middle of the street, dropped a dime or thought they dropped a dime and bent down to pick it up. And look, before I got to that place, I used to watch them guys, man. And I said, he gonna bust his fucking ass, bro. And this dude be leaning. And never fall. You know, weevils wobble, but they don't fall in. You know, I saw the dope fiends, man, with the gators and the snakes and the lizards and the flies. You know, the dope fiends that I knew, them cats dressed, man. You know, they dressed. You know, God bless them. May God be pleased with them. A brother named, he got another name, but I knew him as Peter Clark. I knew him as Peter Clark, right? And these cats dressed up pro kids. These cats dyed their sneakers like pink, lime green. They had fly shit, and they was dope fiends. How about the dope fiend that carried the newspaper under his arm and never read the shit? He got newspaper, but he ain't reading nothing. Just looking important, you know? So that's the era I come from, man. You know, when being poor was all right. Because I didn't even know that I was poor. Because I had a mother who at one time raised five boys, one girl. My older sister was raised in the South by my grandparents. And my mother had to leave South at a time when having a child at the age of 15, 16, wasn't a good idea. So she left my older sister, she came to New York, and then she had the rest of the spawns, which was us. She had six other kids, right? And I'm the third oldest of seven kids, right? So my mother did the best she could with what she had. She didn't have a lot, but she made sure we had what we needed, you know? And the roughest time in my life came at the loss of my mother. Because my mother was my best friend. And although I wasn't in recovery when she passed, I grieved her in Narcotics Anonymous. I grieved her death in Narcotics Anonymous. And what happened was, and I'm going to share this, I was at a girl's first year anniversary. She celebrated her first year. And I've never seen anybody do this, and I've never seen it done again. I mean, people probably do it, but I've never seen it. I haven't seen it. And she went in her pocketbook, and she took out $500, and she gave it to her mother. She said, "Mom, this is the money that I owe you," that she had took from her mother. And one thing I always wanted to do was make amends to my mother. You know, because I grieve my mother, man. Because I did some things to my mother, man, that, you know, and not just me, man. Like, I listen to you sisters in here when you talk about your kids, your son, your daughter won't stop using or don't listen. But listen, what about when you're a mother and you got five grown people that are not kids running in and out of your house? Boy, close that door. You know, the door opening and closing, and she can't sleep and creeping around in your room when we think you sleep, and digging in your pocketbook and knowing where your stash is. And you don't got a program to go to. You don't have people to help you out and tell you what to do with your child. All she could do was pray, and she was a praying mom, you know. I remember sitting in the welfare office with my brothers and my sister, all us together, waiting on that my mother to get that check. And back then, you know, they done things. They had to do what they had to do to survive, right? So I remember when you can get a welfare check, spend that shit, and go back and say you lost it and get another one.
I remember that.
I did that. See the identification? I remember that. You know? I remember having to walk through the schoolyard, Vic, with my brother, while everybody else was going to school, my other brothers and other kids were going to school, and we had to walk down the block to the projects before we moved in the projects. We had to walk down to the projects, and then they had a little place in the community center where we had agricultural stuff. Y'all don't know what that is, right? I know y'all don't know what that is. You know what I mean? And the best thing they had was the cheese. They still sell that shit. You just don't know that's what it is. You catch them when it's first in the refrigerator, it's still in that box. Right? So I remember having to eat that cheese. We had what was canned meat, right? They call it Spam, but it wasn't no damn Spam. I don't know what that shit was. But it was good. We made hamburgers, cheeseburgers out of that shit. Peanut butter, powdered milk, powdered eggs. I hated them powdered eggs, but I ate them. Because that's all we had. You know, my mother took care of us. She never abandoned us. She never left us alone. Here's a woman raising five boys. I'm not even talking about the girl. Five boys. We a mess. I was the one that was always in jail. I was always locked up somewhere or doing something I wasn't supposed to do because I was a very self-destructive kid, man, you know. So I remember when that girl gave her money, gave her mother that money that day, right? And when she handed it to her mother, I just, like, something just cut loose, man. I had never really, really grieved the death of my mother, you know. And if you ask people, say I look just like, I'm actually the only one that looks, and there's people that know my mother, they'll tell you that I look just like my mother. And everywhere I went, I mean, I was way up near Canada, Ray Brook. I was in Petersburg, Virginia. I was in Lewisburg, Pennsylvania. Everywhere I went, she went. She made sure that I had whatever I needed, right? As much as I took from my mother, she never turned her back. She never closed her door. And in her dying day, she left New York and moved to North Carolina, where she bought a home. And in that home, she had five rooms. Why? Because that's what we lived in. We had the same thing in the projects. And she wanted to make sure we all had somewhere to go. Although we were grown, and you know what? And doing what we wanted to do. And I've always grieved the fact that I didn't think I could make amends to my mother, you know? But I was told how to do that. I was told how to do that from a counselor. You told me to write a letter to your mother and tell her what you did, right? And after you do that, ball it up and throw it away. And then write a letter to your mother, or write a letter to yourself, saying what you think your mother would say.
Yeah.
And I did it. Because, you know, when you get clean and you see the steps and the traditions, well, I'm used to looking behind me, but they ain't there. When you see the steps and the traditions, when I first came into a place, you know, the first thing I saw, even after the first step, I went right past that to the ninth step. You know, making amends, you know. We made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. And the first person I wanted to make, it wasn't even me. I didn't even think about me. I wanted to make amends to my mother. And so I was able to do that. And I still continue to do that in this process. You know, so I'm just truly grateful. But when that girl did that, man, like, I just broke down and I cried for what must have been like a half an hour. And the brother, may God be pleased with him, Maurice G, he was sitting next to me. I guess he thought something was fucking wrong with me. What the fuck's wrong with him? Now, he didn't know how to reach out and hug me and console me, and he had been here a while. So this thing, man, is not overnight, it's over time. We got to keep coming. You know what I mean? But Tish, I love you, and I'm not shouting people out, right? But she was there, and she held me the whole time, and I just could not stop crying. I haven't really cried since then, you know? A lot of anger, a lot of grief in recovery, caused some by myself, caused by other people because I allowed them to do that to me, right? Because in this process, they talk about becoming vulnerable. You know, let me tell you something. You know, people tell you that you got to get vulnerable in here. You know, you got to let yourself be vulnerable. Because I'm a guy, I came from an old school, man. You know, there was a lifestyle long before the drugs. I didn't just smoke crack. I did everything. When I used drugs, it was fun. I'm going to tell the truth. It was fun for me. But at the end of the road, none of that shit was fun. Right? I didn't know if I was going or coming. Listen, I was suffering from psychosis, paranoia. I always thought people was coming when they wasn't even there. I'm not that guy that can do the roof. I hear people talking about rooftops instead. Listen, I'm not sitting nowhere. I take a hit. As soon as I take a hit, I hear some shit. I think people's coming, and I'm running. And I'm running. And now I ran my high off and I gotta go do it all over again. I'm not doing that shit no more. I'm not doing it. You know, listen, I was in a relationship for 20 years with a woman, man. And in that 20 years we used together. The whole time. And when I got clean, she chose to continue to use. And I thought that I could save her. So if you're sitting in this room, if you knew, save yourself. You can't save nobody else. I don't care how much you think you love someone. And I wouldn't leave her, and I wouldn't allow you to tell me to leave her, because she was there for me before she got caught up in the grips. The woman had two jobs, worked every day, you know, decent. And I kind of grieved that when I left it, not her, but she's clean today, thank God, not because of me, but because of God. She didn't come this way, and I'm grateful for that too, because I got into a relationship in here. Y'all said don't get into a relationship. I waited my first year, but after that, it was on, you know. But there was a little boy in that, you know, her daughter, who I raised from 5 years old to an adult woman. And even in our active addiction, we took care of her. She went to school. She graduated from high school. She went to a prom. She did all those things. But there was times now when she got up to go to school and didn't have clothes. Because I remember those times. Because I was a part of that, you know. But that little boy, he was 4 years old when I left that house. That's my grandson. I love him to death. He's 15 now. Yeah, and you know, he's a handful. Loves to play basketball. He's taller than me. I had him with me for about 6 months, and I was ready to send him home. Really. 2 months. Came in my house 1 o'clock one day. 1 o'clock in the morning, man. And then when I said something to him, he's going to say to me, well, I didn't want to come in anyway. What the fuck? What are you doing here? Well, I'm leaving. And I said, don't you go, do not go out that door. You know, because I come from that, man. You know, but I love them. And I know how the streets are. The streets will eat you up. These kids don't play fair. So he goes to go to the door. And I go to stop him. And he wants to tussle with me. He wants to tussle with Grandpa. Hey, he almost got away from me now. I said, ah, I can't have that. Nope. And I slammed his ass against the wall. And he kept trying to tussle. And I had to go there, man. I prayed on it afterwards. I grieved about it. But I had to go there. And I banged him in the chest. Yes, I did. And he straightened his ass up, too. And he went his ass back to the Bronx with his mother. You know, and I miss him. I miss him. But, you know, I got rules in my house. This is not your mother's house. This is not your grandmother's house. You're not going to call them up on me when I'm taking care of you. So, you know, we had to get that understanding. I had to let him go. But, you know, I grieve that. You know, another thing that we grieve when we come in here, man, we grieve and we mourn the death of the drug. You know, a lot of us grieve the drug, man. You know, and I remember somebody saying to me early on, because somebody was acting out and I didn't like it. And they said, well, maybe you just mad because you can't get high. And maybe they was telling the truth. But let me tell you something. If you use like I use, and you've been through the shit, and I hear some stories that ain't mine. It's not my story. I don't want it to be my story. That's why I don't use. But listen, I do not mourn fucking drugs. When I hear people say my dealer, I don't know what that shit means. My dealer. You're not my dealer. I don't listen. People, you bring that shit with you. You know? You still got his number in your phone. You know, but grieving that is grieving death of self, because I died in active addiction, and when I say that, I died of a spiritual death. You know, I really did, man, and I thank God that this program has given me another chance to put my life back together, and it's so awesome. It's so awesome, Narcotics Anonymous. So, newcomers, this is a program of basic suggestions. This program suggests that we suggest you take the suggestions we suggest you take. And that's just a suggestion. And the one you don't take, your ass will pay for it. You will. Sometimes we can come in here and we can talk ourselves into grief. You know? Or we, what about unjustified grief? Just using it as an excuse. You know, my grandfather died about 20 times, and he was already dead. Yeah. So I use him so I can keep using. I never stop. But just for identification purposes, I came in here, I was 46 years old. January 2nd, 2003 is my clean date. I celebrated my 13th year in Narcotics Anonymous. One day at a time. See, I'm like you. I used to think they was bullshitting when they came into that place. Thank God for H&I, man. Thank God for H&I. Because I was that guy sitting in the back talking about, y'all motherfuckers is full of shit. Because the first thing addicts wanted to do when they got clean was get some jewelry. I knew some of them, and I wasn't even in recovery. They was walking around, had gold hanging on their neck, gold coming from everywhere. And I thought they were still using, but they wasn't. I found out. A lot of them died clean. A lot of them died clean. You know what I mean? So I want to die clean, man.
Me too.
You know, but I was so stressed out this morning. I got up. I got on, put on my jogging suit and got on the boardwalk. And I jogged and I ran. And then all of a sudden my heart said, boy, sit your ass down. So I sat my ass down. You know. And, you know, I did a 12-step. 12-step, right? Tom. Wow, that was quick. I really didn't think I was going to be able to get through this. I'm grateful it's time. But I sat down and I listened to the ocean. And I meditated. And I prayed, "How I love you, brother." And I prayed. And I was jogging. And I ran into my friend George on the boardwalk. He was running. And he said, "Listen, you could do this." Because sometimes I just doubt myself. I need somebody to tell me I could do it. You know, I'm not cocky like that. I'm not. And I love this fellowship. I love this program. I want to thank CPR, CNA, for inviting me here and allowing me to share my experience, Strength and Hope, on this topic of grief. And I hope I help somebody along the way. You know, I want to thank Shirley A. for reaching out, wherever she is, and Bobby Joe. And these are people I never met until now. And so I'm grateful for this program, what it does, man. Lost dreams awaken and new possibilities arise, man. You know what I mean? If you're here, stay here. If you're here and you're using, welcome. We welcome using addicts. If you're here and you're counting dirty clean time, keep coming. Maybe you'll get it right. Right? Maybe you'll get it right. And I'm going to say this and I'm going to shut up, because we're talking about grief and recovery. And you know what? I got a phone call. I was sitting at a meeting over there just before this one started. And I got a phone call from a cousin of mine, who another cousin of mine has been missing in action for a while. And he came, you know, the seed was planted. He came into the program, but he couldn't stay. His father died from this disease, right? And I got a phone call that, and I, when I looked at the phone and I seen his brother's name, I thought, this is it. I thought I was getting that call, but it wasn't. He said, "Al's home." And he was away, and he's trying to get in touch with you. So I told him I'm in Ocean City right now in Maryland, and I'll be home Sunday, and gave him my number, and he gave him my number, and then he called me. And he said, "Joe, yo, I'm back, cuz." I said, "What you mean you're back?" He said, "I surrendered." So I said, "I hope you suffered." And there's a sister in my area that always says that. "I hope you suffered." And I said to him, "I hope you suffered." And I mean that in the best way in my heart. Because if you suffered enough, just maybe you won't go back. I said, "There's a meeting on Richmond Terrace. Starts at 1 o'clock. He said, "I'm standing here right now." I said, "Ask for George." He said, "George is right here with me." I said, "I'll see you Sunday." I'm a great recovering addict. My name is Joe. Thanks for letting me see you.